we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Simon.
And today we are looking at the final episode of 2009 series, Paradox. The Ministry of Defense woman bursts into D.I. Flint's home, catching her in bed with D.S. Holt. They've put their phones off the hook, and they are needed. Now. New images have arrived, and it is unacceptable that they are unavailable. She also reveals that King, too, is not answering his phone, and that he has gone off into the moors. Flint is sent to retrieve him. During this, a man's home is being vandalized, and his car being stolen by a gang. King is suffering greatly after last night's death, but he is finally convinced to return to work. The latest batch of pictures appear to reveal multiple bodies killed by gunshot, and what appears to be D.I. Flint's hand, holding an automatic weapon. One of the images is a repeat of the business card from two paradoxes ago. D.C. Gatta is convinced this means there is unfinished business with the rapist, Stuart. Holt is visiting his kids, making them breakfast, but gets into an argument with his teenage daughter, Leah, over a picture of her with a boy named Zach Headley. He warns her off Headley because Holt put his father away and he's bad news. Leah doesn't respond well to her dad's meddling and storms out. Holt proceeds to Zach's place where he lives with his younger brother and he warns him off his daughter. Later, at Prometheus, Holt recognizes Zach as one of the dead bodies in the picture, and another next to him might be Leah. He desperately tries to warn her, but she won't answer his calls. The gang from earlier, which includes Zach's younger brother, are planning something big against the man whose car they stole. He is a physics teacher that is trying to get the neighborhood to stand up to the gang and have them arrested for murder. Flint surmises that this incident is much more intimate, that it is actually all about them. Maybe Gatta is right. Maybe someone is trying to send them a message. Gatta learns that the owner of Holly's salon was raped and murdered, and he knows that Stuart did it. King continues to search, and ultimately finds the wormhole he suspected. And he starts searching for an MOD-connected physicist that has advanced knowledge of wormhole. King appears convinced that the MOD is somehow behind this. Leia runs into Zach, and they eat breakfast together. Zack isn't the thug Holt thinks he is. Zack knows his father was a loser, and he wants to make something of himself. He wants to be a physicist. As they are about to go their separate ways, another call from Holt causes Leah to defiantly stick with Zack and attend today's peace rally organized by the physics teacher. Zack wants to send a message to his brother, who he considers to be a stupid loser like their father. King tracks down the URL in one of the pictures and discovers that he has met the teacher previously. He goes to the teacher's school. Holt tracks down the gang, thinking Zach is with them, and tries to kill them with his car. They survive, but neither Headley is with them. Holt is still unaware that it is the younger Headley with a gun, with the intention to kill the physics teacher at the peace rally today. Gatta follows his own path. He finds Stuart, takes him to an isolated place, and after explaining that he misunderstood what the Lord wanted of him last time, this time he knows for sure. He murders Stuart and attempts to make it look like suicide by self-asphyxiation. All the players in the drama arrive at the school as time runs out. King tries to warn the teacher, but it's too late. Headley brings out the gun. They try to talk him down. D.I. Flint enters and also tries to talk him down. King tries to explain that in just moments, a stress fracture will occur in one of the windows, sounding like a gunshot, and that he must remain calm. But then, the teacher has a heart attack and falls to the floor, raising the tension in the room. The window goes pop, and Headley starts shooting. Gunshots are fired. Flint wrestles with a gun from him. And in the end, Zach and Leia are unharmed. The teacher appears dead on the floor, and Dr. Christian King lies bleeding from his stomach, also on the floor. Sometime later, in a strangely empty lab at Prometheus, a new signal comes in. This time, the voice of D.I. Flint is asking for help. So, this is the conclusion of the show. What did you think?
Well, obviously, it wasn't a conclusion. I mean, it ends on a cliffhanger. So, you know, what? You cannot be serious. You can't leave it there. There's just too much. I mean, I didn't think they would wrap it all up in one episode, but there's too much left unanswered. There are too many things we don't know that have been themes running through all of the stories. Things like, what's the MOD's role in this? You know, who is this mysterious woman and what's she about? Who's controlling the wormhole, if indeed someone is controlling the wormhole? All those kind of things, together with trying to figure out, okay, how does this time manipulation work? Is history really being changed? You know, there's all that stuff, plus the actual cliffhanger in the episode. So I can't believe that they meant to end things here. But no. Having said all that, you know, I did enjoy it. It was a good episode. Not quite as good. I mean, I still think that opening episode was really quite exceptional. The first couple of episodes were really very good. But this comes close. It's tense. It's interesting. It's exciting. There's quite a satisfying. Although I've kind of complained a bit about them leaving certain loose ends dangling around plot points and things. There's quite a sort of satisfying trajectory involving the characters' personal development that has run through this, that kind of comes to a conclusion for various of them. And that feels well done. So that feels satisfying. So overall, I have to say I enjoyed it.
It was a nice, tense drama episode, and I might have been a little happier with the ending if the lab hadn't appeared to be cleared out at the end, because you could have drawn from it that maybe that was happening that night, and so the fate of everyone was left unknown. But by making it look like Prometheus Lab has been cleared out, it doesn't look good for Dr. King surviving this experience, which I think. I don't think the show would work without him, necessarily. But
I agree. I think particularly in this, I really kind of came to enjoy his presence. But I don't necessarily think it was intending to go without him. We don't know what has happened to him. We don't know what his fate is, and we don't know how things will play out. Obviously, something has shifted. You know, we haven't had an audio file through before.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's D.I. Flint's voice asking for help, she is sending a message herself back in time to ask for things to be changed. Now that's new.
If it is her voice. I admit I put it down as that in the summary, and that was the impression of the three people in the room who were watching it last night. But it's by no means certain that that was her. I mean, she doesn't have that distinctive of a voice, and it was kind of, you know, it was a distressed, plaintive voice, so it didn't, you know, it takes on a different pitch when you're like, oh, please help me. So it could easily have been someone else. I don't think it was the woman from the MOD, but, no. You know, it could be somebody completely different that we've just never heard of before that's was supposed to be in the next episode of the first season. I'm going to blame Blake Seven for this. I don't know for a fact. My friend and I went through, David, who does the show sometimes, went through everything we could think of on television, British, American. And as far as we can tell, the first instance of a television show that ended a series on a cliffhanger with the intent to try to spur them into getting people to demand more episodes was Blake Seven in its first year, which is the only spoiler you're going to get for that. And but since you know there are more years, that's not so bad. But yeah. As far as we know, that's the oldest show we could come up with that tried that trick, and I hate it.
It does seem to be common. It does seem to be common practice.
Nowadays, it's just all the time, and it, you know, great if the series goes, and terrible if it ends like this.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, exactly what the motives are for doing it. I'm sure you're right. There are many cases where it's done as a kind of lever to try and ensure that the show gets continued. But I think even that there must be some cases where shows know or even have already been commissioned for a subsequent season still end it on a cliffhanger, because that's seen as, you know, being a good way to kind of tantalize the audience. And it can be effective, you know. I'm not saying there's no situation where it's good. Here, clearly, they've come completely unstuck with it.
Yeah, I just don't get the feeling. You could end a story and satisfyingly end the story and yet not end the story for all of the characters, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So, I mean, you could leave stuff up for a cliffhanger, but then not. But at least you've answered what's been happening to some satisfaction for the group. And in this one, I don't feel that. I feel like they just cut this right in the middle of a two-parter that was supposed to give me something important. I was supposed to get something important out of this episode, but they're not going to reveal it until part two, and part two is never coming. That may be why I couldn't remember what happened in it. I think I may have blocked it out of my mind. I was serious the other day when I said I honestly don't remember what happens in the final episode, and I did see it. I do remember it clearly now that I have watched it again, but I totally blanked 100% of it out.
What do you most want to know? I mean, is it the fate of Dr. King you care about, or is it the other aspect of the storyline that we're still...
It's the other aspect of the storyline. I would like at least something better than King found a wormhole and now he's looking for Ministry of Defense connected physicists that he might be able to... I don't know whether it's... I think it's based on Simon's reaction to that in the story, that he suspects that King suspects the MOD has something to do with it. The other alternative explanation is that he wants somebody else who has MOD clearance that they might be able to talk to and try to work out what's going on. But it's still... You know, for example, in the case of Gata, it's much clearer to him. Clearly, God is talking to him. And so, in a way, he has his answer. And in fact, the team is coming off their wheels. They're all going kind of different directions on this continued onslaught of this. And I just don't feel like I got enough. This is a freaky phenomena that to my mind, must be directed by some intelligence in some way, whether it's men or little green aliens or God or whatever it happens to be in this story. And we just...
Or even if it's not being manipulated, which, you know, was the implication in this episode, there's still someone utilizing it, because those images have to come from somewhere.
Right.
So, you know, and that has been, you know, throughout it, although we have focused a little bit on how the images themselves were created technically, there has been a lot of discussion in show about the agency involved in sending them. Gada, obviously, as you say, is quite certain the images come from God. Okay, that's got its own kind of internal consistency to it.
It's definitely a God of the gaps argument there. But
yeah.
God did it.
But we may think it could be the MOD, or it could be some far future successor to, you know, the Ministry of Defence. Maybe there isn't even a British government at the time at which these things are being sent. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess that's it. I don't feel that we got any, absolutely any understanding whatsoever in these five episodes of where this source is.
Yeah.
That's the storyline that needed to progress a little bit to make me feel like the characters had made some progress in these five episodes. And they're just, it might be a wormhole. Oh, I found a wormhole. Wasn't the piece of the puzzle that satisfied me in any way, shape, or form. So that was really the...
Yeah. But while they didn't make progress in terms of developing, you know, an understanding of what was actually behind the phenomenon, there was, I thought, some really great character development, particularly Gada. What a journey, because when you first meet him, you're not quite sure what to make of this character. As I think I said in the first episode or two, one of the things that made it initially a little bit difficult to engage with the characters is none of them seem to be especially likable or excited about what they discovered. And Garda seemed to be not that likable because he was quite a kind of slightly quiet, but also quite weak-willed character.
He seems unimaginative to me.
Yeah, yeah. And indeed, that is proved to be the case, I think, quite strongly. But it's absolutely fascinating when you see the journey he's gone through to end up where he is, where he's come from that. So that I think that's a really nice piece of character development, and it's a brilliant, brilliant denouement. It would have been fascinating had the series continued to see how that would have been handled, you know, how he would have acted in the aftermath of this act, because he clearly, I mean, obviously he's a bit of a nutter.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have found it hard to hold it together, you know.
Maybe.
I imagine.
Maybe. On the other hand, he was obviously looking to God for strength, so he was having doubts or second thoughts, perhaps, going into the act. But after he was done with it, he seemed pretty resolved.
Yeah.
That he'd done the right thing. So I mean, those had been dispelled. So that's my question to you. Not necessarily was he right to kill him. Okay, I won't put it on that level just yet. But
well, you
was
I mean,
Stuart
you can,
the
you
killer?
Can ask that question because I think one of the things
was
that
Stuart
I
the killer. We never actually saw him do it.
Yes, he was, and okay. And that's one of the things that I liked about this was that they didn't try to soften what. You know, essentially one of our leads, one of our heroes in this, where he'd ended up by making it less ambiguous, by making it as if what he'd done would be justified, except, oh no, Stuart wasn't really the killer. He was really this innocent guy who was going to be from. Well, no, he wasn't. He, as far as I'm concerned, everything in this episode points towards the fact that, yes, of course Stuart was the killer. Of course he was guilty. Every action, everything he said points in that direction. And that's what makes it so powerful that, and Garda sees that, and he does it. And we have to react to the fact that that's how he's behaved. He's been unhinged, or he's been pushed over the edge, because obviously he's a slightly odd personality. He's been pushed over the edge by the kind of sense of power that this strange paradox has provided. And now he's done this terrible thing.
I just thought it was, you know, looking back at it, I did think it was interesting that, one, obviously Stuart didn't kill the girl outside the nightclub. And
do you think he wouldn't have done?
No, I think he would have. I do think he would have. But we didn't actually see him do it, and because she didn't get killed. And he walks for that exact reason. And he says, no, I was trying to help her. You had a police officer who witnessed him lift the thing up over his head like he was going to swing it down and strike her. And apparently that's not good enough evidence to put a man away for attempted, whether it was attempted swinging a assault anyway. It wouldn't be attempted rape with a hand, with a shoe, but you know, it was clearly an attempted crime. And yet D.I. Flint's words, not good enough. A policeman witnessing you about to strike someone is not good enough. Well, that's all we saw.
Well,
too,
of course it's not.
It's not good enough for a conviction. So that's all we saw. He said, well, I was just giving her a shoe back. Well, okay. For the system of justice that we have, we've seen exactly what has been witnessed firsthand, and we know it's not enough.
No, we haven't, because the jury doesn't get to see this stuff firsthand.
No, we've seen more. That's right. We've seen more than they have, but the jury would get to hear us say, yes, I saw him pick up the thing and he's going to swing it. And apparently that's not enough. And then,
that's not a crime, is it? Looking like you're going to hit someone isn't actually a crime under British law.
I don't know. You have a law for attempted assault? I mean, I don't know what the threshold for that is, but
We've got ABH and GBH, but they actually involve causing harm. Not sure what else.
Yeah, I don't know where you draw the line at. Well, okay, so then why does he bother to say he was trying to return the thing? If it's not a crime, well, I'm just looking like I was going to hit her with it. Why not say that?
Because he...
Is that make it a crime by admitting you were trying to hurt the person?
Maybe he assaulted her.
So I don't know, but you know, we didn't really see him kill the woman whose name up until I thought was Holly, but whatever the owner's name of the Sonia or Sheila or whatever it was. We saw him come in there, but again, he had a plausible story. They were in love. They were going to run off together.
That was not plausible. That did not fit with what we had seen.
But it doesn't amount to evidence that he killed her. So God is taking this on the same way we are.
I wouldn't convict him in court without, you know, based on what we'd seen. No, I mean, I think you'd have to look at the forensics. You'd have to look at building a case. Garda's problem was he wasn't going to be able to build a case.
Right.
Because no one was going to believe him based on the additional information he had that there was any reason to look for any further evidence. They already had a plausible suspect. The building of a case might have worked. We don't know. But Garda was convinced it wouldn't.
I'm reasonably convinced it probably wouldn't as well.
I think it's probably pretty likely.
So he got a serial rapist off the street. So good job, Gata, right? I mean,
well, that's the question it's putting to which my obvious reaction is no. But
we clearly see this guy is not going to stop. I mean, how they ever let him out? A guy who just gets out of jail for, what was it, 10, 15 years? Forgot what they said it was. And, I mean, he's supposed to be going to therapy, and he's already on three victims. He's working on the woman in the church in this episode. I mean, that is not somebody who should have been let out of prison. I don't know what the grounds are, but, I mean, he should be under psychiatric help.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing, of course. The problem is the rules have to apply to everyone, and no system is going to be 100% perfect. Regardless of which is the question of whether if you're concerned they're going to escape justice, are you allowed to kill them?
Only in the Old West. Only in the Old West. It's an interesting, it's an interesting change in times, and I'm not writing this off lightly, because that's a much more, having Gata kill him is presented as a much more dramatic, much more extreme act than, I mean, he's committing murder. He has to steel himself up for murder, and it's not taken lightly, but you can go back as simple as a 75 years and look at the popular fiction of the day, and it's pretty common. You know, the guy who lays out justice from his own sense of right and wrong, and they're the heroes. The Saint, for example, if you go prior to the television version of The Saint, he was a cold-blooded murderer, but he always killed people like this guy, who was clearly dead.
There are morally questionable heroes in literature, Flashman. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to approve of the actions that they take.
Can you approve of the result? I mean, Stuart's off the street, he's dead, and he will never hurt anybody ever again. Of that, I would have to say, well, I approve of that.
No, I don't. You can approve of the result. I don't. If there had been judicial process in this case, he would have been sent to prison. If he were found guilty, he would have been sent to prison. The state would not have executed him because... Yeah,
you don't do that.
We don't do that. What with us being a civilized country and everything. So Garda has not only it's not just extrajudicial action, shall we say, for want of avoiding a more loaded word, but it's also it goes beyond what the judicial process would do to anyone because of the rights that we all have.
So what do you think the writer was trying to convey in this?
I think the story is how the paradox, how the time, seeing the future and the kind of fatalistic view that Garda certainly initially had, and the view that it kind of transformed his outlook into and his religious beliefs, it's that journey. And what's interesting about it is just, you know, just how far it tipped him from being a kind of not just a law-abiding citizen. This guy was a policeman. He was someone who, you know, was a DC, trying to do his best to keep people safe, to bring people to justice, following the rules, doing what he believed was right. And then suddenly this revelation which challenges his whole world view, tips it on its head, more or less, drives him to a point where not only is he no longer following the rules or whatever, he has appointed himself as judge, jury and executioner. He is acting, as he sees it, directly on God's will, and he's going around killing people, or at least he's killing someone, but there's no reason to suppose that if he's not stopped, he won't kill again.
So in the first episode, he was the most fatalistic of the bunch.
Yes.
If this is the future, that's the future. We shouldn't be tampering with it. In the second episode, we see him go through he has a lot of trouble breaking the rules to help Flint, throwing the phone away, keeping an eye out while she breaks into the guy's house. He's, as you say, his journey has begun. He's gone from, you know, not only do we follow the rules and here's what's going to happen and it shouldn't be changed, to he's kind of being almost unwillfully drawn. Well, not almost. He's unwillfully being drawn into taking action. And at the end of this story, number two, he gets a result. They save that boy's life. Those images are not cast in stone. And I think that's where you take your point where he switches from, I don't know what he was thinking in the first one, what the purpose of the pictures or why the pictures were there. But by the end of that episode, I think that's where we see the turn where he is now fully on board with the notion that these pictures are trying to tell them something. And that's, and we go from the pictures are trying to tell us something to, but I don't know what it is, to this last episode where the pictures are telling me something and I absolutely do know what it means. And you have to ask yourself, why is that picture of the card in there again in this episode? It is as if it's trying to push his buttons.
Well, it's possibly that, but it could also be, you know, by and large, these images have been sent by whoever has sent them back through time in order to avert some kind of catastrophe from happening. You know, whether that's an explosion, whether that's an accidental death, whether that's someone committing a murder. So given that, in this case, the fact that this piece of evidence from the scene of a murder is sent back through time, you've got to assume the intention is to stop a murder being committed, and that would be the murder of Stuart. And they don't, because they don't solve that problem, because they don't realise that the murderer is DC Garda.
So they've got...
Well, except for DC Garda, who obviously does realise that, but doesn't want to stop it.
But maybe he doesn't see it as murder anymore. He may just see it as God's will, which is not murder when he tells you to kill somebody. I guess what we have previously seen, and I can't think of an example that isn't, the clues lead them to something. And their action in following the clues sometimes causes the event to occur the way that the clue says it will. For example, them visiting the pedophile in the second episode causes him to have this anxiety asthma attack, where that's what it appears to be. And
but there's certainly examples of that.
Right.
And we're not the players. We're the game.
Game.
Which is seen as being a kind of revelatory line in this. But actually, as you say, we got several of those instances in episode two.
But in this case, in that one case, that card, the second time through, that card is the trigger. It really, God is seeing that card is what snaps him. So it's the worst possible thing you could send back to try to prevent the crime. It's the thing that causes the domino piece that knocks over.
About the photograph of D.S. Holt in episode two, that photograph is in.
Is that supposed to be a warning, though? I mean, that's a warning. Well, seeing Stuart tied up.
Would he ever have been there? Would he have gone there if the photograph hadn't been sent back? Because it's what causes Flint to try to warn him off. And when she tries to warn him off, he's determined to go and see what's going to happen. So with hindsight, you can say, yes, that is what causes it. And actually, you'd think hindsight is probably what they ought to have, whoever they are, in the future, because they're in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely...
This is the kind of thing that does my nut. That's why it's called paradox.
It's definitely why I keep asking the question during these episodes. Is what was the moment where they changed something to the point where Holt doesn't die? Or they changed something to the point where the woman doesn't die in the fire? Or that they stop the woman from being raped? There's... All the pieces are setting everything up. Something must be just slightly different, but there's no way for us to tell, as far as I can see in these stories, what it is, where they break from the prescribed timeline, because it's so close. It comes back so close to the exact same circumstances that they must be doing almost nearly what they would have done anyway, but how is that possible? I don't know.
Well, I've got a couple of things to say about that. One about the kind of theory of time within the show, and one about the way the show has handled this and how it's actually affected. I think it's been a problem for the show, but in terms of the way the show handles time, there is some discussion of it, which I think is a bit. Illuminating, if not a complete explanation. One is there's that conversation that Flint has with Dr. King, and they talk about the watch, and as soon as the watch is in the picture, I'm thinking, trash the watch, shred
Me
it.
Me too, destroy it.
Stamp on it. Because it's like the phone in that first episode. You're thinking, what would have happened? You know, they're worried that the phone is in the photograph. So what would happen if they just taken it off him and smashed it? So like Holt says in episode three, if you'd wanted to protect me, you should have locked me up. With the watch, trash it. But Dr. King addresses that and says, the watch is just an accessory to the events. It's not a cause. If you change that, if you got rid of the watch, that's what you'll change.
Cut off your hand. Would that have worked? I was joking when we were watching it, but
perhaps. But one of the things about it is that the what's in the photographs are the indicators. It's not necessarily the cause. It's difficult to know what the cause is, and here's the kind of core thing which I think is absolutely fascinating about time in this. And it's to do with information, and obviously, the kind of root of the paradox is to do with information. Because when you have a paradox like this, the kind of bootstrap paradox where stuff going back through time, just like you're saying with the card that triggers Carter's going after Stuart, it's a loop, it's like where does that originate from? And what we've got here is there isn't that much information being passed back through. We just get these photographs with these small indicators in of what might be going to happen. And the fact that if you change something small, something trivial like taking the watch off or whatever, you will only change something small in the future. You don't know what causes the events, how they come about. In fact, there's so much you don't know. What could you possibly do to change it? Nothing. There's nothing you do where you know precisely what the outcomes are going to be. Unless you've got quite a lot of information, how can you possibly predict cause and effect? And you can't, you know, if like King is urging you want to take a more systematic approach to this, you can't do a controlled experiment about changing the future, because what's your control?
Mm-hmm.
Those things aren't available to you. And then there's this slightly more sinister aspect to it, which is kind of what you say about the events occurring, whatever you do, that's kind of events. That's the way events play out. And it's a bit, I thought it's a bit like being trapped in a spider's web, not the kind of web of time in the Doctor Who sense, but in the sense that when Flint calls out to Holt on the phone to Leah, she says, don't spook her, because she's worried that it's actually his phoning her up that is going to cause the chain of events where she appears dead in that photograph. And they're dealing with the fact that they don't know enough to know whether what they're doing is more likely to cause these problems or less likely to cause them. And it's almost like there's a kind of intentionality to time that it's pushing them in this direction. And if they're not careful, it will just push them harder. Like if you're in a spider's web and you struggle, then you'll attract the spider's attention, and that's the worst thing you could possibly do. Or if you're caught in a snare, trying to struggle to avert the fate that the photographs are showing you is waiting for you isn't going to help matters. It's actually going to make things worse. You're going to get caught in the trap that leads you into those events.
Yeah, I think one of the styles of time travel explanations in science fiction is the flow of time that says these things deviate for a while, perhaps, but they always return.
Yeah.
To their path. And one way we could look at it is that perhaps it's just comes back to its path very, very quickly in this fictional universe, that it doesn't make a lot of difference. I would be more satisfied with this mecha. It wouldn't be as paradoxical that the events still occur, but do they still have to occur at the exact instant that we know it's going to occur? You know, struggling in the web speeds up the arrival of the spider, but it doesn't speed up the arrival of the event in these.
Yeah.
Or slow it down. You know, yep.
I mean, the difficulty, as you say, is that it's impossible to know where you're seeing a deviation from the path of events as they were supposed to be. So from a dramatic perspective, you can't really see what the outcome of their interventions is. And from their point of view, they don't know what they should be doing.
And we don't know what they do to win. I mean, in the case, like, yeah, when they saved the boy, I don't know how they won.
Exactly. It's why, in a way, episode one was so satisfying, because you just saw everything come together as it was predicted in the photographs. And the real intrigue and the drama came from seeing how it would come about, not what would happen. But I think it's problematic for the show, because they say things like, certainly without intervention, these teenagers will die. But as you have pointed out with the card, as we've seen in episode two, we know that their intervention is in some cases, what leads to the events that are photographed actually occurring. As they say, you know, we're not the players, we're the game. So it's by no means certain that without intervention these teenagers will die. It could be that the intervention is the cause of the teenagers dying.
Yeah. I mean, if Gata hadn't gone off on his own crusade, and I think I can use the word crusade quite correctly there, he may have been helping this process, and the outcome would have been different. Completely different. But he was sidelined by that card and basically taken out of the important story, or the main story, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. So, although, you know, the very existence of the Operation Talisman is due to the photographs going back through time.
I kind of wondered if there is some sort of a play on and it's literally it's a play on because I don't have a good grasp of it, and I'm not going to even pretend that I have a good grasp of it. But in physics, we often talk about, and let me qualify that when I say we, I mean other people who know what they're talking about, not me, because I don't do it. So I'm talking through my hat here. But there is an information theory associated with physics, and it posits certain quandaries about the amount of information that you can have, or the way that information can be conveyed, or how information experiences entropy in certain conditions. And when they're talking about information, they're not talking about information like I deal with in computers, but they're talking about, I assume, the coherence of the matter.
Things like the Heidelberg uncertainty principle.
Right. So we've got, I'm wondering if the writer has heard this, is clued in on, and we are seeing something here. This is a minimal amount of information that's coming through. I mean, it may seem like a lot to us because there's never been any information travel through a wormhole before.
It's a huge amount from that point of view, but it's certainly a very small amount from a police officer's point of view.
Right. If you were trying to send a message to somebody, it's not much. It's pretty, maybe this is just, you know, maybe they're sending them a, they're sending them an episode of this TV show back in time, and the only thing that gets through are a few still frames because of entropy and traveling information through physical distortions of the universe. You know, maybe there is something, and I think they could have, the story could have progressed, and I think this is sort of what we're seeing in that last scene, by maybe Dr. King could have been doing something to improve the reception of the information. You know, by working at this end to improve what we get, or, you know, the people at the other end or whatever at the other end improving their transmission, like getting sounds through now all of a sudden.
Yes. That's what we're going to. I mean, I think they were wise to stick with just images, at least at first, because that gives them the opportunity to kind of expand a little bit on that. I think it works that we're only given a very, very small amount of information.
Next it would be Vine. Yeah. Vine. 16-second video clip with no sound.
Yeah. But actually, I think the problem, you know, coming back to this other aspect of the way the show deals with time, but actually looking at the structure of the show itself and the problems I think it's caused the show, was the choice to introduce the kind of bootstrap paradox in episode two, because obviously they also have in that the first instance of changing the future and the grandfather paradox associated with that. As I said at the time, I think one or other of those would have been fine. Actually, looking back at the show for five episodes, bringing in the bootstrap paradox is something they should have held right back to this episode, I think. This revelation that we're not the players, we're the game, could have worked in a kind of final episode. But there was plenty within that setup of just drip-feeding the photographs, keeping the information minimal, not having it about the team themselves, you know, not having a picture of Holt in there, and keeping that simple to kind of allow room for the individual stories and the drama around them, so that when you kind of needed to build up to a climax and you wanted people's heads to start spinning, so you had something to resolve perhaps in season two, that's when I think they should have introduced him. Because they went all out with the paradoxes in episode two, I think that left them a problem, because you got what seemed to me a slight crisis of confidence in episodes three and four, where they started to go a bit more procedural, because they kind of, their powder was spent in terms of the kind of physics side of it. And here in episode five, where they start trying to build tension again out of this idea, well, it's not new. Their powder's not dry anymore, so we're not getting such a big bang.
So are the people or the things or whatever or wherever the picture's coming from, are they at a quote-unquote fixed point in time in the future, or are they in flux too? And I ask because if we take episode two, in which Holt is killed in their pictures, and assume that they're sending us that information from a reality where Holt is killed, Then the pictures that came through in episode 5, where his daughter is killed because she's with Zach at the school, seem extremely unlikely that that would ever have occurred.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously, he must have lived for the next chain of events to have occurred.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's right. And this is obviously where it all gets very confusing, because in the future, each of those sets of photographs could have been sent. They could all have been sent at the same time, but sent back by decreasing amounts of time. Or they needn't even have been sent back in the order that they were received. I mean, such is the nature of time travel, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
If they were all sent back by a fixed amount, I think it would make sense to assume that in the future, history had been changed. But because, as we've kind of observed, history doesn't seem to change that much, you'd kind of, the thing that instinctively seems to me the most likely effect of sending information back through time is a kind of chaotic effect, where you send some small piece of information, small inconsequential piece of information back through time, which, you know, through a kind of domino effect, changes all sorts of other inconsequential and possibly consequential things, so that the future becomes unrecognizable. Clearly, that's not the case. So if something like Holt being dead changes to Holt being alive, that probably isn't going to change the existence of whatever agency or setup is sending those photos back.
So it's not Holt in the future.
It's probably not Holt. That obviously would be quite a big change. But if it's something that Holt is involved with, it can still function without Holt, we've got to assume.
So it kind of, King finding the wormhole kind of destroys my alternate theory that these pictures are being generated by some massive supercomputer modeling project, which is trying to model the near future, because then the wormhole aspect of it would be unnecessary. It would be some other MOD project injecting photos into Prometheus through probably more prosaic means, like using a computer or something, rather than beaming them through a wormhole.
Yes.
Which seems like two massively huge separate projects. The I'm going to send stuff through wormhole project and the I'm going to model all life and existence on Earth project, which do seem possibly a little out of scope for the MOD in 2009. But, you know, no, so I think that one's shot. So I think the only answer is they come from the future at this point. There
yes.
is no, there's no alternative there.
I can live with that because...
do they come from alternative
the title,
futures,
the title
though?
Of the show would be pretty meaningless if your theory had proved to be correct.
Yeah, but are they, you know, are they alternate? Well, there's the section in the episode where Holt asks King, where am I dead? And he says, in an alternate timeline, in an alternate paradise, universe.
Maybe.
So, you know, could these images be beamed across, universal lines? The wormhole doesn't open to the future.
Yes.
Worms open to a completely different future.
Perhaps.
Although, what would be the point of trying to fix an alternate
future?
Yeah, fix an alternate timeline. You know, to the idea about holding back the grandfather paradox till this episode.
Well, no, I mean, I think if you're going to show them changing the future at all, then I think that did make sense to show that in episode 2. It's them being a part of the events.
Right.
The bootstrap paradox that causes.
Oh, that's the bootstrap, sorry.
I thought they shouldn't have introduced at the same time and probably should have held back to this episode where it becomes more meaningful.
Well, one of the things I liked in the first 2 episodes was that we did see a natural progression. In the first episode, you have to be established that this really will happen.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do that
in
the first
episode.
Absolutely. Because if they change it, then we'll never know if it really was an accurate presentation of the event. So it has to come to that. I would have thought that they could have, in the second episode, presented to them a scenario by which their involvement fixes that, but doesn't lead to the events that cause it to happen. As in, they spook the guy by visiting him, that causes him to go out and ultimately get killed in a random accident, which means he doesn't get back to the kid in time for the kid to not be drowned. So in their they're bootstrapping right there. And
yeah, but
they could have,
not necessarily a problem because we don't know for sure that they spooked him.
You could have
multiple interpretations of that.
And we don't,
that ambiguity lets you get away with it.
A certain amount of audience would have, a certain percentage of the audience would have taken that immediately, that they spooked him. That looks so much like a panic attack, which makes perfect sense if the cops show up at your door and you've just abducted a boy and they want to talk to you.
Why does he go and get a Ventolin inhaler?
I think a panic attack can trigger asthma. I mean, you have trouble breathing. You have, you know, accelerated heart rate. I've had panic attacks. I don't have asthma, but somebody who needs air, just like running, an asthma attack can be triggered by over exerting yourself. And that's what he's doing. So I think that's pretty clear cause and effect that he is essentially freaking out and it's causing his medical condition. But
he could have had an asthma attack without that.
He could have had an asthma attack without
that. The thing that is unambiguous in the episode and the thing that really causes the problem is the image of Holt.
Because he's there only because he's investigating the crime?
Yeah.
Is that the
precisely.
But as I say, they could have solved this case in much like they did the first one, where their actions, well, you could say their actions may have led to some of those as well, but their involvement gets them at the right place at the right time to prevent the thing from happening without them setting in motion any of the events that led to it. And they could have led us through the various stages that we go through here. Can't change time. Yes, it can change time. There's more than one event here and I can only change one thing. You know, they could have reordered these a little bit so that we would have continued to progress through this learning process of what can and can't be done.
Yeah.
That's still what I'm saying. Yeah, I think they could have
From
done
a dramatic point of view. I think that would have left them with a structure where it actually built up to this final episode.
Although maybe they should have revealed that in the fourth episode, because part of this episode is that self-doubt, you know, am I doing the right thing or am I doing the thing that's causing it? And if they had not experienced that previously, that they could be part of the web, then it would have been a surprise at the end, which for them there wouldn't be as much drama involved in their actions, sweating it out, well, you know, what can I do not to cause this, as Holt kind of did with his daughter, caused her to be there. So, I think they should have held it towards the end, but I don't know that it should have been the very last one. I think it added something to this episode that they were concerned about it. But I don't think it would be clear to them until, you know, it wasn't clear to them until the end that they were leading to the effect. So, you know, you do have to reach the end point of time for the revelation to be obvious to them. So they needed it to be before this, but it could have been last night instead of today. But
there's no new information from the way things turn out in, for example, a second episode that they wouldn't have had as soon as the images came through if they'd sat down and thought about it. You know, clearly this image of D.S. Holt couldn't have been taken place. He wouldn't be in that place and time without this photograph, in much the way that at the start of this episode, Flint is already thinking about the fact that, you know, if that's her hand, if she's in the image, then is it her investigation that's causing her to be there? I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing for her to think about after having conducted three or four of these, I don't know whether to call them investigations or should we call them interventions?
Yeah.
But she's got the experience at this point to be able to deduce that just from seeing the image. It's certainly a shock when you see one of them in the image. I think they introduced that image of Holt so they could have the drama of hiding it from Holt and then revealing it from Holt. But to me, that wasn't as satisfying a storyline as you could have had from structuring the kind of revelations about the the physics and the philosophy of time travel if they'd staged it rather than giving it all away in episode two.
So what about that URL?
Yeah, that bugged me. Why didn't they just do a Whois lookup?
Yeah, you could do a Whois lookup, and that might have helped. You could have. Why did they send a picture that was of the URL that didn't work?
Well, I hadn't even thought of that, but that's an excellent point.
Because by the time we get to the actual event, right, the only URL that anybody has up on their screen is the correct one, not the wrong one. So obviously that's a picture from prior to the event, not at the moment of the event.
Yes, true. I did think that was odd and not especially well handled. When
back in 2009, people weren't as internet savvy as they are today.
Yeah, but this is a guy who, that is the kind of thing you would expect. And so I have to say, one of the things I did like was the comment when Flint looking at the X-ray of the heart with the flaw in it, and she says, you know, it can't just be a heart. There's got to be something special about it, is the implication. And she asks Christian, as if a scientist would know everything about every discipline of science.
She's obviously
which is a trope in television. You know, that just happens far too often.
She's been watching TV. Yeah, that's what
exactly. And he just snaps back, I'm a physicist. I don't know that stuff. And I just thought, yes, right. All TV should show scientists like that. You know, that if someone is a discipline specialist, the kind of scope of the knowledge that they might be expected to have is not infinite. And to have that kind of biological or specialist understanding of human physiology or whatever is not a reasonable expectation for a physicist like Dr. King.
Okay, remind me to come back to the cracked glass in just in a minute. The heart picture. I know that the MOD has put a complete, you know, ban. These things don't leave this room. They can't go anywhere. Take them out. But surely the MOD has a doctor on staff that they could trust to come in and see one anonymous sonogram of somebody's anonymous heart and say, what can
Excellent
you tell
point.
Me about that heart?
Is
that a healthy heart? Is that a, you know, and the guy goes, well, that's a guy who's had myocardial infarction and looks like there's some buildup tissue. And they go, thank you very much, top level doctor in the military. We appreciate your help, and send them on their way. And they would never know anything at all about this at all. And would have not compromised their security whatsoever.
Yes. So I mean, I think the essential plot point, what we need to know is it's a dodgy ticker in the photo. We don't need to know why. But they don't know that. So you're absolutely right. It would be absurd for them not to investigate that using whatever resources they had available to them. And unimaginable, they wouldn't have that, you know, that kind of resource to call on. So I entirely agree.
So the window. So yes. The Holt and King get into a big fight over the window because Holt sees that as a bullet hole, and King knows that it isn't a bullet hole, and they come to blows and in some contrived dialogue Google piece, which I'll skip for the moment. And but after Holt storms out, then King says, "No, that's a stress fracture. It causes in the there's an imperfection in the glass, and then heating, and then it can break in tempered glass like that." And at the end of the episode, King has obviously figured out the trigger in his mind because he says it. He says it to Headley. He says, in just a few seconds, that window is going to break and make a loud noise. You must remain calm. So he's reasoned through. Or has he reasoned through, or is it something else? Does he have some knowledge? They've accused him of holding back knowledge all the way back to the first episode, and we have seen him progress into somebody who seems to be utterly and totally committed to altering the future and stopping these disasters. And has he reasoned it out, or is he revealing some extra knowledge that perhaps he had in this matter and is just, you know, being, because he's so invested in, emotionally invested in solving these crimes? I couldn't quite get that. Obviously he reasoned it sort of wrongly, because the heart attack and the glass were the things that were the trigger. But I don't know. It was a first chance where he, you know, there have been other times where he would look at something and nobody would ever figure it out. And yet he does. And I can't think of an example, but it seems like, you know, he was looking at some picture of, was it the soundproofing in the second episode? Or, you know, he kind of comes out and gives them a hint when they don't seem to be getting far enough. And was this his hint, you know, that he held for himself? I don't know. I got a feeling like we were supposed to get something more out of him in this episode and then didn't.
I think he reasoned it out. I quite like the fact that you can have a completely implausible coincidence at the crucial moment in this, which is the kind of spontaneous explosion of the window and the heart problem occurring at the same time. Because, of course, you're not talking about two completely, in terms of probability, you're not talking about two completely independent events. It's a situation where something is a given, because we know that this is going to happen because of the photographs that have been passed back through time. Then the whole reason that we are here, that we are interested in this event, is because these unlikely events have actually occurred with a disastrous consequence that now needs to be averted. So I quite like the fact that they can tell the story in that way. I think he's reasoned it out because he's obviously in his mind going through the photographs and thinking, this all leads here. What was that photo for and what was the significance? I also think that he's not hiding anything or holding anything back. I mean, King is the other character who I think has gone through a really interesting character development arc. We obviously have the crisis that he goes through at the beginning of this episode following the decision they made at the end of episode 4, and he has that kind of speech where he's saying, you know, he's trying to say this is about the thinking about the kind of wormhole aspect of it, the stars and the universe, the cosmos as a whole, if you like, rather than the kind of very human issues that concern someone who has just made a decision about, you know, who's going to live and who's going to die. And so half his mind is on this kind of wormhole thing. And yet, as well as, you know, having had that crisis and the kind of showdown with Holt, which I quite liked that showdown with Holt. The dialogue was, if you intend to hit me, can we just circumnavigate further propagation and skip to the act? Which is clumsy, but I don't know, I kind of quite liked the way that he wasn't going to fall for what he saw as Holt's emotional blackmail. He called it sentimental. Holt's emotions, obviously genuine, but not constructive. And he was cutting straight through that.
I didn't understand that scene, frankly. I really don't get why King didn't just say, it's a stress fracture.
Because I think he is emotionally wound up,
but
he was
he's like he's trying to push Holt's buttons.
Yeah,
and I don't quite understand why he was trying to push Holt's buttons. That's the bottom line of it. He's like, the guy's running off. It's a gunshot on a daughter, and then he comes in. It's not a gunshot. Oh, fight, storm off, and then somebody says, so what was it? It's like. Isn't that the first thing he should have said? It's not a gunshot. It's a stress fracture.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So I that was the other piece in this story. The fact that he didn't do it, the fact that he didn't say it, caused Holt to go out and call his daughter again, which pushed her further towards the path of being at the place.
Yes. Yeah. I think he was acting. He was acting himself quite emotionally at that point. I was quite impressed by how he behaved in the classroom, where he obviously was under pressure, and yet he was very kind of cool in terms of dealing with that and communicating with the teacher and with the brother, the gunman's brother. So I liked all of that. I thought As I said, King is a good presence in this show. It wasn't clear in the first couple of episodes exactly what kind of person he is. I think it's still a bit unclear, but we've seen a couple of sides to him that I quite like. I've enjoyed it.
There's one thing I find more disturbing, and this is a technical thing, not a story thing, mm-hmm. but I see it more with BBC programs. I am impressed at times with how accurate to the day they are in their broadcasts. So you'll be watching a show and they'll go, oh, June 26th, that's tomorrow. And they'll be airing it on, like June 25th. And you think, wow, the amount of coordination that they had to do to get that episode to come up to air when it's on or near. Sometimes it's off by a day or two, but it's
depends.
Really
quick. If it's EastEnders or something, they know they're going to...
No. I mean something like Doctor Who. Amy's Wedding followed up right about the right date that Amy's yes. Wedding was going to be on.
And that was unusual, though.
It was unusual, but I have seen it in other shows, and I got the feeling they were doing it in this show, because when we saw Dr. King's video, when he pulled up the video of him in that classroom, they made a point of showing us the date. I have no idea when this show is airing. I'm watching it and I'm going, is that today's date? Is that a video from the future too? Because I think they're showing Zach and Leah in the video as well. And if this had happened months ago, clearly Zach and Leah wouldn't have been in the picture too. So is that date now?
I don't know.
But then later Simon comes in and he says, well, look at the date. That's from back in March. By saying back in March, we now know, well, that's something he did a long time ago. How long ago? I don't know. That bugged me. I felt like they were relying on the audience knowing that it was December 22nd when the show aired or whatever it was.
Well, yeah, but I mean it would have been when when the audience were watching it.
Right, but in 2009, you should probably know it's going to DVD eventually or repeats.
Well, maybe.
Or, yeah.
Maybe. I mean, partly that depends on how well received it is, I guess. But actually, it's quite surprising that this show is on DVD, given that it's kind of sunk without a trace in terms of, getting another commission or whatever. But I kind of thought saying back in March was good enough, because that conveyed that it was more than a couple of months ago, or it would have been last month or the month.
It was
before.
Good enough.
And less than a year ago, it would have been last year.
It was good enough when Simon said it. But when King was looking at it, they drew the camera to the date on the video.
Okay.
So that we would know. And then it's like, but I don't know. I don't have the context there at that moment to know why King's like suddenly storms off. It's like, don't know what that date is. And maybe it was March of 2008 and I should have seen that, because I didn't. I was, they draw it to your attention to it for just a moment. And you're like, it's a date. I don't know what the date is. And you just kind of pull it off. But I suppose if it had been 1997, I probably would have gone, oh, that's a long time ago. Or 2027. Go, oh, this is from the way I... But yeah, it just didn't work at that moment at the time. And I felt like they were trying to tell me something, but I didn't know what they were trying to tell me. So, and the fact that they show Zach and Leah at that point made me think that was supposed to be a picture from today when the event occurred. And I was, didn't think that came off particularly well. But, well, so we have come to the end of another show.
Indeed, we have.
Perhaps not the most satisfying. So would you recommend somebody watch the show, though, knowing that the ending is going to be a bit abrupt? Is it?
I think that's a tricky one. I mean, we were chatting, you and I, the other day off mic about things like Almost Human, where it's not something either of us have seen, and we're a bit discouraged from bothering, knowing it's been cancelled after one season. And I think, in a way, if I were looking at this show as a whole and saying, would I encourage someone to watch it, I would feel that the fact that you kind of get all this set up but there's no real payoff within the show, is probably a, you know, a black mark against it. I really, really enjoyed the first couple of episodes. Overall, you know, I enjoyed the show as a whole. So I'd probably say, you know, depending on what people liked, it would definitely be worth taking a look at. Even if you just watch the first couple of episodes, there's something to enjoy there. But I probably wouldn't be rushing to recommend it.
And that
one series thing, really, in a way, maybe that's not the reason. Maybe if the show were a bit better structured, had a little bit more internal logic, built things up a little more carefully, I would be inclined to say watch it, even if it ended on a cliffhanger. You know, things like Ultraviolet was one season. It seemed to work up to setting things up for a continuation of the show. I would say absolutely, definitely watch that. Firefly, I mean, it got a kind of resolution in having the movie Serenity. But that's a one season wonder, if you like. What a fabulous show. I really enjoy rewatching that. Even some things that have gone on beyond the season. I would say, you know, watch series one of Primeval. Really, don't bother with anything beyond series one, but watch series one for its own sake. So actually, in a way, maybe that's a bit of false logic on my part. I think one series shows can be great, or even just watching a series of a show can be great if the show is enjoyable on its own terms. The real problem with this is that it felt like it was a reasonable, quite a decent build-up for something, but that show's just never really arrived. So.
You know, Primeval is a very, very good example of what I was talking about earlier. Primeval, the first season...
Such a well-crafted show.
It told a story that we didn't see was out of time, and the story got resolved. The mystery set up in the first episode was absolutely resolved in the last episode, and along the way they learned stuff and did things, and all
and
of that.
And they managed to throw in a cliffhanger. But
then they throw in a cliffhanger because it's a completely new problem.
Yeah,
I mean, there were still some things that were left out, like Helen, what Helen was about, et cetera, or what she was up to. But we
it's
got enough out of it that
it
was all.
Into it now.
That it was all resolved to the point where if it had ended right there, I'd have gone, boy, I would have loved to have seen the second season, seen where that was going. But I saw the story. I learned the story. And it used to be you could reliably trust, you know, if the British put out like a 6-episode show or something like that, that it was a story, that they told a story in that point. It was something that, you know, in the United States, that was not seasons and series were longer. They were intended for reruns. They were intended to be standalone. And it wasn't until the 70s when we started making what we call miniseries that would be, you know, 6, 7, 8 part stories.
But this is not a serial format. This is it's a formula show. You know, every episode works in the same way. You get a bunch of images. You get the Talisman team working out what those images represent. You have them trying to stop it. You have them succeeding and failing in some way. You know, the interest there. There is a continuing arc through it, but
it's this arc
that shouldn't
thing.
Stop you from enjoying the episodes in their own right.
Yes, it's this arc thing that is, as the arcs get more important, you're getting formulaic episodic shows that we can watch 5 episodes of this show and enjoy, and then still hit the 5th one and be annoyed that the show feels unfinished. You know, you can't envision, well, 5 sets of pictures came through the thing and that's the end of it. They went back to their lives, and if there's ever another sequel to this, it'll be 20 years later when suddenly, mysteriously, another batch of pictures come out and they have to go dig up the old team in their geriatric homes and come out of retirement to solve one last case, like you would with, you know, Star Trek or something.
Should we blame the X-Files for that?
Well, I'm still...
Or does it go back further?
It definitely goes back further. Like I say, we can get some of this back from Blake Seven. Terry Nation has a lot to be answered for here. But even there, he sort of finished his arc stories, slight though they were. They were slight, but and not all always there, but Babylon 5 used it well, I think. I think usually,
I mean, I think that in a way is perhaps the difference, and I'm not up to speed enough with Blake 7. Obviously, I haven't seen the whole of that first season to know quite how much it subverts the series format. But the serial thing isn't new. I mean, clearly, Charles Dickens was writing serialized stories. So the idea of having one overall story that is then chopped up into chunks that you get delivered each week, that's been around forever. But then having a series, the idea of a formula where the same kind of thing happens every week, you tune in, you know what the formula is, you kind of expect to see what you're going to see, that's something separate. And it's mixing that in with these story arcs, these kind of serial elements running through the series. That's, I guess, what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's great if you can watch them after the fact and you've got the DVDs, you've got them on Netflix or Love Film or whatever service, and you can sit down and do that sort of binge watching that people,
which is presumably what's driving it now. I mean, that seems to be so common, the kind of series with arcs.
Yeah,
driven by being able to watch things on Netflix. You know, having a whole series of House of Cards delivered to you in one go, that has become not just an option, but the kind of primary form of delivery for some things. So,
yeah. I would just be happier if they would stop it at the end. They would finish a story at the end of that. They would fulfill the expectations I have of the contract between writer and reader or watcher. It's like, I expect you to at least tell me a whole story here. You can tease me with more. I'm fine with that. But maybe finish my story.
You know, the series, or what you Americans call the season, is no longer the unit for a whole story, in much the same way that one installment used to follow another. Maybe now the installment is the season. And so all we've had here is installment one of the story divided up into five chapters.
Yeah, okay, then they better put their money where their mouth is and make the whole thing.
Well, yeah, this thing's been cut off mid-serial in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah, well. Oh, well, I guess that answers. Well, I enjoy Paradox. I mean, I willingly knew that I knew it was not a satisfying ending for me. But I willingly went back and watched it again, and I did enjoy the episode. So my recommendation would be, you know, if you haven't watched it and you've listened to this podcast, you might as well go watch it, because I'm sure we've dissatisfied you enough by telling you what happens. So
go back in time to before you listen to the podcast and watch it then.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or are you one of those people that just stores up the episodes for years, waiting to get the chance to watch the episodes that we talked about before going on? Well, thank you for joining me, Simon.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
And listeners, we hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol. Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolfe.